Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Manager Madrid podcast. We are in a beautiful park with the great Alex Kirkland of Real Madrid TV. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hello, mate. Thanks for having me on.
We are here to talk about all things Real Madrid, the crisis, wonky stats, Real Madrid's historical woes in terms of their scoring, and also the fact that after a lot of hard work unearthing the stat that Real Madrid haven't scored in X amount of time. What was it?
So literally everybody yesterday at the Bernabeu was absolutely convinced because it had been widely reported, not just in one paper or one radio station, but everybody was saying that Real Madrid, if they went 55 minutes without scoring yesterday, that would be the longest ever non-scoring run. It then turned out it wasn't. It was the second longest ever non-scoring run because someone had mislaid 30 minutes of extra time that were played against the Athletic Club back in 85. Anyway, it wasn't in the end the longest ever non-scoring run, and we all looked a bit silly.
So two things stick out to me about that stat. One is only one person on earth has the patience to go in and find out the correct and go through all the minutes, and that's Mr. Chip.
Well, yeah, so Mr. Chip is the king of stats, but he himself was the one who got it wrong initially.
Oh, okay.
So he then rectified it, but he initially had given
full circle.
Yeah. He held his hands up. And
what was the half-hour extra time thing about? That's incredible.
So it was Real Madrid Athletic Club in the Copa del Rey, and it was a game that went to extra time, and seemingly
people
had looked at the games and just gone 90 minutes, 90 minutes, 90 minutes, and added it up without checking that cup game went to extra time.
Also the fact that, I mean, all these injury time minutes, like, do they count that?
Apparently, no. I don't think you do, because theoretically, those are minutes that haven't been played during the 90, because there have been stoppages during the 90 minutes, if you know what I mean. It's all very complicated. I don't think we should get hung up on it too much. Look, the fact remains, Real Madrid did go an awful long time without scoring a goal until Marcelo's goal yesterday.
Yeah, and that's a huge problem. So we'll get to Marcelo. To me, I thought he was one of the bright spots yesterday. Mm. You and I were both at the Bernabeu yesterday. We chatted at halftime.
We had a quick chat at halftime. Yeah. I was feeling a little bit sorry for you afterwards, thinking about the fact that you had flown across the Atlantic to be there, while I had just walked 10 or 15 minutes from home.
Yeah.
But as you were saying, look, you're in a privileged position nonetheless. Win, lose, or draw, you'd rather be there, right?
We mentioned this off-air, is that my worst-case scenario is I watch Real Madrid lose, suffer some historical goal-scoring droughts, and then I come in a beautiful park and I talk about football with you.
What an idyllic scenario. Sometimes, I don't know, you know, there's that old cliche about learning more from defeat than from victory.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that's true. But I think that from those of us who write about or talk about and watch a lot of Real Madrid or any other team, sometimes you can kind of pick a lot out of a defeat, maybe more than a victory. That doesn't mean you want your team to lose. Of course it doesn't. But you can get a lot from it.
I'll be quite honest. As a journalist, this is where we make our money. Because it's like, as soon as something goes wrong, that's when we get the spike in traffic.
It's sometimes easier to write about, isn't it? Like, sometimes it's not easy. Like, if you've just won a game, like, I don't know, 5-0 at home, there's not a lot to say about that other than, you know, everything was great again. There's often a lot more to say when things aren't quite going according to plan.
There are, but I would be more than happy writing about Champions League dynasties for the rest of my life.
I know.
But this is the nature, the club we support. I mean, I know you're an Arsenal supporter, but I know deep down you have a heart spot.
It's not the nature of the club I support. Believe me.
Imagine that Arsenal had won 4 and 5 Champions League trophies.
I can't even begin to imagine it.
Yeah, but this, what are we really complaining about?
Arsenal have won 9 games in a row, and I'm on cloud 9. I'll take that. Forget the European Cup.
They look great right now. But back to your point, after a defeat like this, you walk 10 minutes, you go home, you indulge in a pint of ice cream. I have to take.
You know me so well.
I have to take an 8-hour flight home.
Yeah.
That's the difference. But, there are a lot of interesting talking points. At the time of this recording, Lopetegui is still in charge of Real Madrid. When you listen to this, he may or may not be. We don't know. There's a lot of speculation. I was looking forward to going down to the presser yesterday, just, you know, out of curiosity to see how we would deal with it. You know, nothing was extraordinary to me. There was a lot of talk about, you know, the job security is not on my mind at all. And same thing as always, missed chances. The goals will have to come at some point. We need to find solutions in attack. So there are so many angles to look at this from. I think in a lot of ways he's right. He's right. There are certain things that he can't control. There are certain things that he obviously can, and maybe in those situations he hasn't done a great job. But if we're talking about a sacking a manager, which I know you can't really talk about. But if that does happen, which it does seem in a way inevitable, it's incredibly harsh when you look at it.
I think that there are a lot of kind of intersecting reasons why Real Madrid have been on this bad run. Of course, everyone knows it's a bad run. Lopetegui knows it, the players know it, the board know it. And fans get angry, and I understand why they do. And there was some whistling yesterday at the Bernabeu. But let's not forget, the players get angry, the board gets angry, the coach gets angry. All these guys are winners. They are used to winning lots of things all the time. And when they don't, they do not like it, believe me. They feel it just as much. But no, I think there's a lot of reasons. I think that some players have had dips in form, and those dips in form have kind of coincided. I think that a couple of injuries in the recent weeks have been quite unfortunate and have left key players out of the team at just the wrong time. I think that football, I think we underestimate sometimes the extent to which confidence plays a role in football. And when a team is on a negative run of not scoring goals, it does become almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it gets harder and harder and harder to break that duck. I think that part of it as well is something that a lot of people have talked about and remarked upon, which is that the overall level of La Liga overall is higher than ever, in that there aren't many easy games. Levante are a pretty good team. Alaves are a very good team.
Alaves, we like have season. Confirmation now. Enough sample size to know they're good.
Yeah. So, you know, there are a lot of good teams. No team is going to go and win the league this year with 100 points or 90 points or even probably 80 points. We're seeing every single team at the top dropping points. So I think that's another reason. I think all these things together are part of the reason why Real Madrid have been on this run. It is a little bit mystifying when you look at the number of chances they're creating. I mean, they're not all clear-cut chances, but you look at the game yesterday, what, they hit the woodwork three times, right? Had a goal disallowed for a marginal offside. You know, we're talking about pretty fine margins here, and things could have gone differently. But look, there's no doubt that, everyone accepts this run hasn't been good.
If we go back to last season, we had this. I remember having similar discussions in terms of Real Madrid just couldn't score. It was never this bad. But it was the same storyline, underperforming our expected goals. Last season, we had so many chances that just weren't going in. And, you know, it was the same responses from Zidane. You know, we're playing well, we just need the ball to go in and the goals will come. That was the response the whole season until they finally came. In the Champions League, we knew they'd come. In La Liga, they eventually bounced back, although they never really looked quite great in La Liga overall. This season, there were two games that I think were just bad. One was the game in Sevilla. Second half was a bit better. And then the game against Alaves, where as good as Alaves have been under Abelardo, Real Madrid just created nothing. Like, it was nothing happening. Yesterday, I was shocked when I looked back at the stats, because maybe I was just so jarred by how bad they played in the first half. Whereas, like, second half, I was like, no matter what they do, it's just, this is a bad result. It's a bad performance. Second half, after it was all said and done, I went back and looked at the stats. The expected goals were 4.22, which is a crazy number.
Yeah.
They held Levante to 0.83, I think it was, you know, if you take their penalty out of the equation. They had a lot of shots. Three posts, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I thought in the second half, as you say, especially, when Benzema came on, I thought Benzema was actually good yesterday. I quite liked him playing on the left-hand side. I think he caused a lot of problems. Benzema on the left, Mariano through the middle. Mariano, who was just looking to get on the end of anything and everything that was thrown into the box. You had Bale on the right-hand side. It was a very attacking team in that second half.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, look, I think they did more than enough, not just to score the one goal they did score, but to at least get a draw. And I don't know, because I think we're sort of conditioned, aren't we, having watched Real Madrid for so many years. You basically always think they're going to turn it around, and you always think that it'll be Sergio Ramos with a 93rd minute winner or something. And yesterday, as the second half went on, I was still expecting that. I was still expecting that to happen, because we've seen that script played out so many times before. But yesterday, in the end, it just didn't happen.
One thing that when everyone talks about Ronaldo, which is like such an obvious talking point that everyone brings up after each loss and each draw, one thing that I feel was underrated about him was not just his goals. It was his body language and his ability to pick up the team. To me, one of the most famous examples was that penalty against Juventus in the last second when the team was down 3-0. And that part was missing. I think there's the other way to look at it is, like, you have Isco on the pitch, Asensio, Bale, Benzema at some point. Like, they overlapped a bit in the second. As you mentioned, they had a lot of attack. There are times you look at the pitch and all four of those attackers are not even defending. They're just staying up the pitch. That should be enough.
And there's still a lot of big characters in that Real Madrid team.
There are.
You know, we talk about Ramos. You talk about someone like Luka Modric, who isn't a leader in the conventional sense, but he's a leader in terms of the way that he plays. Someone like Gareth Bale has become something of a leader in terms of the role that he plays in the team. So there's a lot of... Marcelo is another one who did step up, of course, and score. So there are a lot of leaders in that team. I don't think it's a team that's lacking leadership in those kind of crisis situations at all.
I wanted to kind of circle back to Marcelo.
I'm always happy to talk about Marcelo. Well,
he's just... he had... After that Sevilla game, he was rightfully criticized for just defending was abysmal. You really miss him offensively in, take your pick, Moscow, Alaves. There were games where Nacho played a left back against Atletico and against Alaves where he just didn't look confident offensively. He does a lot of good things defensively. No one will ever, and that's not a knock on Nacho. This is Marcelo's arguably the greatest offensive wing back of all time. Like, no one can do what he does. Yesterday, he had 7 key passes. It's like Messi-level creativity.
I've been arguing for a few seasons now, consistently, that I think that Marcelo and Dani Carvajal, and you can have the same conversation about, are probably Real Madrid's two most important players in terms of the way they create chances and the way they go forward. I'm talking about in attack, not in defence.
Yeah.
I'm saying they're most important in attack because of the role they play. And I do think that every time that you're missing one of them, or even more so both of them, I just think you really notice. And it's not to say that there aren't very able deputies, because like you say, Nacho, I think, is fantastic. You know, Odriozola's come in now, and I think he's going to be a brilliant player in the future. You know, there are other players there, but what Marcelo and Dani Carvajal contribute offensively in terms of opening up the pitch and giving width, in those driving runs inside that Marcelo makes that just cause havoc in the opposition defence, I just think they're so, so important. And I don't think it's a coincidence that in the last couple of weeks, Marcelo's had injury problems and so is Carvajal.
Yeah. Did Isco look a bit off to you? Like, physically?
Yeah, I think he's not quite... He's not 100%, is he? You could see that having come back. I mean, how unlucky is it to have... I feel like appendicitis.
It's bad.
I mean, any other... You can take an injury that you get in the course of playing football, you can sort of expect... But as a player as well, you must be like, oh, come on.
I was shocked when I saw him training as early as he was.
I mean, have you had your appendix out?
My sister has. I've had to watch her go through it, and it looked so terrible. Because it's like, it's not just the post-surgery recovery. It's that your organs have been shifted around.
Yeah.
You can't physically exercise. Yeah. And when I saw him training on the Real Madrid Twitter feed, I was like, what?
So I'm sure that he's not quite there 100% physically. And yeah, I agree. I think you could see that. I think there was an understandable rush to bring him back, because again, we've missed Isco, and I think especially for Lopetegui's Real Madrid, just as previously for Lopetegui's Spain, I think Isco is pretty much the main man in terms of creating things, so they want to get him back on the pitch as soon as possible.
So here's I talked to a couple of journalists at the Bernabeu about this. You know, they were remarking that is Lopetegui like kind of playing with fire in a basically a do or die game like this? He needs to play his best players, and obviously Kroos wasn't on the bench, and you know, a couple of journalists argued also Vinicius Jr. should be there, and you know, debatable obviously, because Vinicius looks great with Casillas, scores some golazos, but I don't know exactly how that's going to translate.
He scored a very nice free kick today.
I was commentating that game in Vigo.
Yeah, poor old Vinicius, I fell for him today. You know, it was kind of what we've come to expect from Vinicius in Segunda B already, which was so this was Castilla against Celta Vigo B in Vigo.
Yeah.
He got fouled
throughout
the game. And it wasn't, they weren't like hacking away at him in a violent way, but it was quite cynical, rotational fouling. Whenever he was about to break clear, they'd tug him back, they'd pull his shirt, they'd knock him off his strides, they'd take a yellow card, and then the next time it would be a different player who got a yellow card. And this went on and on and on throughout the game. He then scored a bloody brilliant free kick.
It was gorgeous.
Right in the top corner.
It was gorgeous.
To make it 1-1. And he then subsequently got sent off for arguing with the referee about a decision that didn't go his way. And you just thought, the guy's been fouled for like whatever it was, like 88 minutes, like non-stop. And then he gets sent off. I mean, come on.
So I've been vocal about this in the past. And you know, you've watched more Segunda Bay than maybe anyone on earth.
More than you probably should.
Props to you. I don't know how you do it. Because Castilla games can be laboring to watch. Vinicius had added an element of like excitement to it.
Yeah, star quality.
But we know how rough that league is. I feel it gets accentuated against Castilla because they're all just like, who are these entitled kids who think they're better than us? They have more money than us. Well, I don't know. It gets really rough.
Physical. And especially with some of these young, talented players, like Vinicius, like Ødegaard we've seen in the past. I actually think you notice when they do then get minutes with the first team, it's actually easier for them with the first team than it is with...
That's why I always thought when I was watching Vinicius and Castilla, I've seen him make a lot of mistakes. Like, we see the highlight reels, we see are the free kicks and the golazos. But in my head, I was like, he's not going to be making those poor mistakes with the A team because there's just a different standard and expectation. Where with Castilla, maybe he just feels like he's above everybody else.
Well, and he's also, you know, let's be realistic. He's there, I think, to make those mistakes and learn from them.
Yeah.
It's an adaptation process.
I mean, Solari has said that in the past.
He's still a kid. He's still a kid, you know, with huge weight of expectation on him. But he's with Castilla because they want him to get minutes. He wants to get minutes of competitive football as well. And it's better, let's be honest, that he makes those mistakes and learns from them at that level than he does if he's, say, coming off the bench for the first team in a crucial game. That's all part of the plan.
Yeah. I did not see that game. I chose to watch Raul de Tomas with Raul, who scored a nice goal, by the way.
Yeah. That's a justifiable decision, I think.
That was a big digression, but I think the point was, you know, just a lot of people thought like the players on the bench are players who didn't even make the squad should be getting more minutes. I think the players on the pitch were all more than enough to get by Levante. And to me, that wasn't a huge problem. When you look at the great players making mistakes at the back or even coming out of the back, which to me are out of Lopetegui's control, the counter to that is, well, Lopetegui is the one who ultimately needs to motivate, because if the coach can't motivate, who is it? I think that's easier said than done. I think Zidane had the same problem. The huge problem that Real Madrid have had in the past two seasons and arguably throughout this entire reign that Barca have dominated domestically and Real Madrid just haven't capitalized and haven't looked good domestically apart from that 16-17 season. Mm. There's just no urgency to start games. And I don't know what it was, if it was Isco was out of shape or like just the passing, the body language to me was off until the subs in the second half and the hunger of Ceballos, Bale and Benzema just kicked in.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because you hear, time and time again, you hear coaches and players talking about the importance of starting these games in the right way, of talking about that intensity. Yeah. And then it doesn't necessarily translate. But like I say, I think part of it is about the context. When you're on a run like Real Madrid have been on, I just think we underestimate like psychologically how difficult that is for players and how they feel kind of the uncertainty around them, the atmosphere at the Bernabeu. You know what it's like sometimes at the Bernabeu. You know, it's the greatest stadium in the world, but sometimes when things aren't going the team's way, you can feel that kind of that nervous energy and that the expectation and the uncertainty and the crowd sort of wanting and expecting kind of more from the team. And players that, even though they're like elite athletes and professionals, they're also human beings, and I think they feel that atmosphere, and I think it must make a difference. I think part of it is that they're aware of that dynamic, and it's very, very difficult to break out of it.
I'm sure that it's not easy to, on top of all of this, to have the pressure of you can feel it, right? You can feel when the crowd just starts shuffling in their seats, they start moaning, and that, I'm sure, cuts through the players, because everyone's like, there's all of a sudden the pressure goes from, like, you know, just like a floor to like a ceiling.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And you know, that's why it's frustrating sometimes, I think, when you hear the crowds whistling certain players, because I understand it. I understand the frustration, but it doesn't help.
Yeah.
And certainly not during the game. Like, I get if you want to whistle or boo or whatever, I mean, maybe do it at the final whistle or don't do it when the game is still there to be won. That's something that I, both as a fan or as a journalist or whatever, I've never quite understood. You know, I get as frustrated as anybody, but as a fan, my philosophy has always been during the game, you're in the stadium, support the team 100% all the way. Then afterwards, you know, you can shout and scream and make a fuss and whatever. But I think my approach has always been during the game, support the team. Don't make it harder.
I think there is no other choice. But it seems like such an obvious thing to do, right?
Yeah, and it's also, you know, of course, these things are to a certain extent cultural as well, and it's different in different leagues, and it's different at, at different clubs as well. And we know that at the Bernabeu, there is that sense of expectation and the demands are higher than they are elsewhere. And that's,
you don't see it at the Emirates, do you?
I mean, the Emirates isn't an example for any for anyone in terms of stadium atmosphere, because it's just, I mean, look, I don't go as much as I used to. I used to go every week. I obviously don't go, I only go once or twice a season now, but it's
you, often, you have to watch Castilla now.
Yeah, it's often quite dead. So no, let's not look to the Emirates as being a role model for anything at all.
There were two things that, amid that somber conversation I had with you at halftime, there were two things that I actually thought like were positive.
It wasn't too somber, was it?
No, it was.
I mean, you had interrupted me eating my my halftime bocata. That, so if I looked somber, it's probably just because I was thinking, come on, mate, let me finish my sandwich.
After I went back to my seat, I was like, not only did Alex watch that first half, now he didn't eat his sandwich. Like that.
I had to race my way through the rest of it before the second half kicked off. Yeah.
Two things that worked. I thought Levante just really couldn't deal with the set pieces and the crosses. Mm. Particularly the ones that Mariano gets to crosses that he has no business getting.
He's quite a good physical presence, isn't he?
Yeah. The other one was Marcelo, his through passes to Asensio on the left side. Mm. Always on. I was surprised that we just didn't, it seemed like there were a couple of things that like were working and I was surprised that we just didn't do more of. Obviously the crossing set pieces is kind of situational and you can't really control it. But anytime Real Madrid got the ball to Marcelo, him, great pass to either Isco or Asensio or Mariano making that run, it was always on. So there were like things like were brewing that I don't think the team was completely dead by any means.
No, not at any point.
But
any
there
point.
Have been games this season where, like in this game, Asensio at least was involved.
Yeah, Asensio has like lately has had a little bit of a dip, hasn't he? I think we can all see that, and I think that's probably inevitable when you're talking about young players. I think part of a young player's growth is about developing that consistency and being able to deliver, because we've seen Asensio throughout his career, right since he started, with these incredible goals and moments of magic, and what everyone's waiting for is for that next step when he starts delivering that with a degree of consistency and starts to dominate games rather than having these moments. And I mean, I don't doubt that will come. I don't think anyone doubts that will come, but I just think it's always part of the development of a young player to learn to find that consistency. And yeah, he's just had that little dip in the last few weeks, or maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah, I think there's questions about Asensio, so I don't want to dig too deep. Oh, yeah. But to your point about we know it's going to come back, I think it will. And I think maybe what he's done in the past, especially in spurts, like he seems to be a very momentum type player. Mm. Two golazos against Croatia, golazos against Barca in the Supercopa. You know, it just that run last season when no one was scoring and he was scoring a free kick against Valencia and he just looked unstoppable. I think that in a way skews our expectations of him a little bit to maybe an unfair level.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And he's young, like he let him deal with it and cope with it. We have questions that have come in from Patreon, as we always do. Patreon.com/managingmadrid is where you go to pledge. You can support the show and get guaranteed responses to your questions and get different rewards based on your pledge.
We cannot guarantee that you will like the responses that we give, but no. We will give you a response.
We also can't guarantee that Alex Kirkland will be on the podcast every time, but unfortunately for you, you've caught us at a time where fans are a bit angry. So,
hey man, like I say, I understand. Everyone understands the anger. Everyone wants to see Real Madrid win games. So no, look, I totally get it.
We are angry also, but you, we haven't really seen you or even Phil, for that matter, be that unchained in their thoughts.
Well, I mean,
because you just can't be.
Yeah, bear in mind, because of our job,
we
are always diplomatic to a greater or lesser extent because we had to be. I'm sure everyone understands that.
What did Phil say yesterday? Not diplomatic. Use a different word. We're not diplomatic. Oh, it was a different word. But you guys have to be very, very careful with what you say.
Yeah, look, we work for Real Madrid TV. Yeah. So, bear that in mind in everything that we say. That doesn't mean that we're not honest in what we say. I think I'm always honest in what I say. But what it does mean is that there are certain things that we can't necessarily say, or we can't talk about, or we can't speculate about, and I'm sure you guys get why that is.
Decades from now, when you write your book,
the memoirs
filled with stories of your true feelings.
I mean, a lot of my memoirs would just be my sort of Real Madrid Castilla commentaries, which I don't think anyone needs to hear about. But yeah.
So first patron question is from Christopher McCormick. He says, "Can you guys provide a reasonable explanation as to how Solari got his shit together this season? I'm stumped."
Well, hey, look, I mean, I think if you've listened to any of our previous discussions, I've always been on the the Solari train.
You have been.
I never got off that train.
Yeah.
I kept the faith.
You're a rare breed in that
sense. I think my argument has always been that Segunda B is really hard. It's a really tough division. Managing Castilla is really hard. Every season, you basically have to construct a new team every season. Blending like the young players who've come through from Juvenil, one or two new signings from outside, letting some players go, deciding which players to keep. So every season, it's basically a whole new project.
Yeah.
And I just think it's really, really tough. And Solari is a relatively young coach. He's been learning on the job. He's come up through the ranks of the Cantera. He's had a couple of years now in charge of Castilla. Last year, you know, was a bit disappointing for everybody. This year, so far, I mean, we've had, nine? Today was match day nine. But it's going really well. Castilla are second in the table, just a couple of points off the top. And the objective, as everyone knows, is to get Castilla promoted back to the Segunda. I think what I've always said is that, speaking to people who know Solari and have spent time with Solari, he's a really intelligent, charismatic
guy.
He's
amazing. Yeah, he's amazing.
The way that he talks about the game.
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy you sort of expected to be a manager, maybe coming from being a player. So in that sense, it doesn't surprise me. I'm really pleased that he's got it together. And Castilla this season looked good. And it's not just about sort of the magic of Vinicius. Of course, that helps. You've got players who are sort of in their sort of second season or more and have really come into their own. Someone like Cristo playing up front is a very, very consistent player now. Some players in midfield like Seoane, who I really like. There's a really solid defence. I think the centre-back partnership of Javi Sanchez and De La Fuente are excellent. The full-backs are very, very good as well. The likes of Sergio Lopez, who... impressed with the first team as well in pre-season. So yeah, I think there's a whole bunch of reasons. But like I say, I've always thought that Solari ought to be a good coach, and I'm really glad that it looks like he is gonna be one. At least the signs at the moment are very good.
So when you talk about also changes every year, we know that it's different every year. It's not even just like little tweaks. It's like almost wholesale changes.
Yeah, you have
changes.
To build essentially a new team. Like I say, some players do stay on for
a
second year. So you've got someone like Javi Sanchez was with Castilla last year. He's in his second year. He's the captain now. Cristo was there last season and he's in his second year now. But yeah, you pretty much have to build a new team every single season. That's something that's kind of unique about being a B team coach. It's not quite the same as being a coach of a regular club.
Yeah, and I mean, some of their best players last season, like Reguilón.
Who's now with the first team squad.
Quesada's gone. Oscar wasn't.
He wasn't quite great the season that we expected him to have. But
looks
he's
good
now
with
gone
Leganes.
To Leganes, and he's doing really well.
Just watching Castilla throughout the entirety of Solari's tenure thus far, my feeling about this season, I have a couple. I think he's like you said, and I'm always impressed with him when I also hear him speak, because his logic is always reasonable. And he's very well-spoken, and he's a likable character. This season, I think the Vinicius hype and the Vinicius hype train have won us points that I don't know if they win without him. Like, there was that crazy... I was at the game in Majadahonda against Atletico B.
Yeah.
And Real Madrid, it was like watching a Real Madrid versus Atleti A team game at the Bernabeu. Like, they had no answer for Atleti's defense. But Vinicius' brilliance twice. Mm. I think so. He's won them some points for sure.
Yeah.
I'll also say I think there's like this nice thing brewing up front with Cristo. Franchu's look good.
Yeah, Alberto's good as well.
Alberto's looked really good, and also like you mentioned, Sergio Lopez looks really great.
Yeah, he's very, very
good. I think if there's one player who, if you had to like put a gun to my head and say which Castilla player makes in the future, I think Javi Sanchez is like really. Really good.
He's one of those centre-backs who's got personality and plays with personality.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not just that he's the captain. It's not just that he takes free kicks and penalties in a very Sergio Ramos sort of style. I mean, yeah, I think he's got something, Javi Sanchez. I've watched him now for 4 or 5... Yeah, it must be 5 years sort of coming through the ranks, and yeah, he's always like one to watch.
He can pass too; like he's good on the ball. Next question is from Sajid Reyes. Sajid says, "I would like to ask the smartasses calling for Lopetegui sacking."
Oh, I thought for a second that he was just going to say, "I'd like to ask the smartasses," referring to us.
Good. I don't think he knew you were going to be on the podcast, so it's probably directed at me. I would like to ask the smartasses calling for Lopetegui sacking. What would you do differently after your star defender commits two schoolboy errors and takes you 2-0 down in the first 20 minutes of the match? with 34 shots on goal, 12 on target, 4 hitting the crossbar, 2 goals disallowed in a match where we put everything on the pitch, I actually felt proud of our performance yesterday. We actually put all of our blood, sweat, and tears on the pitch and played really good football and created chances, but nothing went in. Unfortunately, Anisco, Marcelo, Bale, they're clearly still not match fit, and as long as the players are willing to fight for this coach, unlike the case with Benitez, he shouldn't go anywhere. Let's face it, we're in a rut. Everything that can go wrong is going wrong, and no new signings or no new coach is going to change that. We just need to dig deep, like Shanti says, and get ourselves out of this the hard way, no shortcuts. So I think while all this is true, history tells us that there has to be one fall guy. And it's easier to sack a coach than to sack a team.
Well, I think, look, ultimately, I mean, in football in general, but especially at Real Madrid, it's about results, isn't it? And everyone accepts that. Everyone accepts that. The coach, the players, everyone. If I think you're right in general, patience is a virtue in football, and that it tends to be my sort of broad stance is to be patient rather than rushing into decisions. But it's a results business. And everyone knows that if Real Madrid keep losing games, like, that can't be allowed to continue. That's not me speaking out of turn. That's just the reality, everyone accepts.
I think it's interesting to see, though, how things quickly can turn.
Well, that's the other thing. It doesn't take much.
Yeah. A win in a Clásico, which... And by the way...
Without Messi.
Messi has been terrifyingly good this season. I still think without him, they're still very good. This goes back to also our maybe I'm scarred from that day when he didn't play against us in the 4-0 at the Bernabeu 2015.
Yeah.
And also, you know, they still have a lot of great players and a lot of players in good form, like Coutinho, Rakitic, Dembele is playing well, Suarez is rounding into form. I think if Lopetegui gets a result in the Camp Nou, which is not inconceivable because Real Madrid historically play better in the Camp Nou than they do against Barca in the Bernabeu.
In the last few years, the results have been good, eh?
And Bale, Benzema, these guys typically play well in the Camp Nou as well. Bale has his like almost annual disallowed goal for a phantom foul or offside or whatever it is. If he gets a result there, I mean, I'd be interested to know how far removed this team is from the 3-0 against Roma. Mind you, I think Roma were worse than people say. Like, I think they were bad that day.
Yeah, but still, Real Madrid were very, very good. That was one of the best performances we've seen from any team all season. That's the thing. That now feels like a long way away, but it's the same team, and it wasn't that long ago. That's what I mean about confidence and about teams going on a run. And when I say it doesn't take much, a win in the Clásico, and then you start to build a bit of confidence again, and then the goals start to go in when they've just been going wide, or you've been hitting the post. Like, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it is true. That is what football is like. We all know that. And then all of a sudden, you could be on a winning run. And the way La Liga is so far this season, there isn't a runaway leader. Like, Real Madrid are still...
They're lucky in that sense, yeah. But they're lucky, but it's at the same time, it's frustrating. Because, like, this is...
When everyone else is weak, you feel like that's the time that you could capitalize.
That's the time to pounce. But lucky. It's funny because those first few games against Getafe, I believe Leganés was one of the early wins.
Yeah.
Roma was the other one. It was so good. Like, not even like being biased, it was good. It was actually good. Like, not even just the results, but the eye test was good.
Mm. You could see the idea of what the team were trying to do.
And we thought it would take long to implement Lopetegui's idea and scheme, but... It was like, oh, from the first game, it looks promising. And I remember writing about how good it was, and maybe I was guilty of getting too excited about it. I don't know. But it actually legitimately looked good. The movement from Asensio off the ball was great. How Bale and Benzema stepped up looked great. Kroos looked incredible to start the season. And it was so amazing that it went from that to, like, I remember writing about the Sevilla game, the Bilbao game. It wasn't just the result I was writing. I was like, that stuff just wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, early on it looked like the assumption that had been made, which was that Asensio would take a step up, that Gareth Bale could remain injury-free and really become the leader of the team, that Karim Benzema, playing for himself and not for someone else, could up his game in terms of the number of goals that he scored, that the midfielders could chip in as well. Early on, it looked like that was a reasonable assumption to make. And then, of course, in the last few games, things have been a lot tougher.
Essa Hariri says, I see Benitez written all over J-Lo's tenure at Real. J-Lo was, I don't know if that's a Manager Madrid thing.
Is
or,
J-Lo a thing? For
I think it might be only a thing for us. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. No, I get you. So, I like that.
Yeah. A lot of people don't like it, but it is what it is. I see Benitez written all over J-Lo's tenure at Real Madrid. With such slacking from some Real Madrid players, I like to think that he should not be blamed much for what is happening. Modric is giving 20% of his potential. No more World Cup. High bullshit excuses, please. Isco is still under anesthesia.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Carry on.
This is our podcast. Welcome to our very non-formal podcast. Asensio and Vasquez are useless. I'm really starting to be convinced that we need new blood in many positions in this team. What do you guys think? Why is everyone playing so carelessly? Did they have enough cups in their CV and not willing to give more?
To go back to Modric, I mean, I don't think that the World Cup is a bullshit excuse. I think that you look at Luka Modric playing this season and it is self-evident that he's not quite 100% because he's tired, because he's had the summer of his life and he gave absolutely everything in the summer and he's not quite there physically, is he? I mean, that's not an excuse. That's how it is.
That's human physiology and fatigue.
We're not going to start doubting Luka Modric or his ability or his desire. Whatever happened in the summer, I mean, he's still the best midfielder in the world. And yeah, he hasn't been on top form. But like I say, given the summer that he had, I think we all understand why.
And it's also, to me, it's not crazy to think that, like previous seasons, these elite players will just find their feet in the springtime too, like, you know.
I mean, which players are we talking about getting rid of? Are we talking about getting rid of Isco? Are we talking about getting rid of Cross? Are we talking about getting rid of Asensio? I mean, now, come on, these guys, every other team would kill for them.
Look,
I get it, I understand as fans, we overreact, and I understand the temptation to be like, look, let's get reds, but I don't think that's not the answer. These players are the envy of world football. Like Real Madrid's midfield is the envy of world football. There's not a lot there that needs to be changed.
I think
in terms of personnel,
it's our collective nature, and not like you and I, but maybe as a fan base, that whoever is not playing for us and is doing well in the world is someone we want. And,
yeah,
you know, if we had, let's say, I don't know, X player in our team and Isco played for somebody else, we'd be like, we need to sign Isco.
Well, and also, because it's Real Madrid, it's a reasonable expectation that if they wanted that player, they could go and get him. And that's always been the case.
Yeah. I also think that another thing that's underrated in all this is that it's incredibly difficult to sustain winning over a long period of time.
Yeah, not many teams managed to do it.
Like, we have, like, a handful in the history of the sport. And this era of 4 and 5 Champions League is one of them. You go back to Di Stefano was another one.
Milan late 80s.
Yeah, but I mean, even Milan late 80s was not on this level of success. It's incredibly hard. And when you have the same core group of players, it can be difficult to sustain momentum, motivation, but also in the specific case of Modric, at his age, went through a historically great World Cup run for himself and his. Yeah, his performance in the World Cup will go down as one of the greats of all time, like just over a course of a tournament. It's taxing. Eric Rogers says, guys, I still can't seem to grasp the fact that we're dropping so many points. So many post shots, and Courtois appears to be has lost all his swagger and confidence. I really do believe in all these guys, but a trusted Madridista of mine seems to think our problem rests with Perez and the board putting too much faith in Bale and Asensio primarily, among other things. He seems to believe that Marco isn't capable of being the player Madrid needs and may have already fulfilled his maximum potential despite being a great player. He is also ranted on to say that Bale just isn't up for it, being the guy this season. We debated, but I'm more interested to hear what you guys think. I have nothing more to say about the game. I'm sure you guys will cover everything I could ask. So please keep up the good work. Thanks for the question, Eric. So we talked about Asensio a little bit.
I mean, yeah, look, I think that Marco Asensio is capable of being whatever he wants to be, pretty much. I think Marco Asensio is going to be one of the best 5 players in the world in 5 years' time, maybe. He's on the way to getting there, but he's not there yet. Because like you rightly said, he's young and he's still at a point where he can have these ups and downs in terms of form. But I mean, I wouldn't swap Asensio for anybody.
Anybody?
I wouldn't.
If it means losing Asensio, no, I wouldn't lose Asensio for anybody.
Can I test you with that?
I mean, what, you're going to say
throw
like
some names at you?
Mbappe or something?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to lose Asensio for anybody.
Okay. If you, and also, if we're patient with it, I think that is a correct take.
And that's not me saying that Asensio right now is the best player in the world. Of course I'm not saying that. I'm talking about the player that
he's
going to be.
If you asked us last summer, to me, this is before Dembele got injured and it took him a long time to kind of find his feet again. There were three players out of the young prospects that I was like, these three are going to be special. It was Asensio, Mbappe, and Dembele. And we're not far removed from that. We're not far removed from him scoring two great goals against Croatia and everybody losing their minds over him.
Yeah.
If you think about what we asked Asensio to do this particular year, is essentially this. We're selling the greatest player in Real Madrid history, and that era is over. And by the way, you're going to be starting every game.
And if Asensio...
That's a lot.
If he wasn't starting,
mm-hmm.
you know what everyone would be saying, right?
Why isn't
Asensio starting?
Yeah.
Why aren't we giving a chance to this, you know, Spain's best young player? If he played every week, then he would develop a lot faster.
Yeah. I also think like he has earned the right for us, you know, to expect some more patience from us. He's given us a lot. I think, you know, given also what we paid for him, which was literally nothing, and how he blew our minds and has done so much for us over the couple of years, I think he's earned the right at his age also to just, you know, earn some patience from us. I think he'll be fine. That is my feeling. I think that's your feeling. Sad Omar says, what must happen for Lopetegui to be fired at this point? Relegation, we couldn't be going into El Clasico in worse form, and I don't believe Lopetegui can turn this around. Does he stay if we lose that game? Do you think the chances of Real Madrid playing in the Europa League next season is high or low? There's a lot here. I don't want to talk about relegation or Europa League. I don't think that's going to happen.
There is no way that Real Madrid will be playing in the Europa League next season. There is no way.
Alex Kirkland exclusive.
It's not. Oh, come on. You don't see that as a serious possibility.
No, I don't.
That's not going to happen.
It is interesting to me, and this was a conversation I also had with Sid at the game. It was like, if it happens, like, the timing of it to happen now, if it does happen, means whoever the coach is like, hello, coach, here's the fire. Go to the Camp Nou. Like, that is, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And on one hand, maybe it's like, oh, you know what? Here's the Camp Nou, and no one expects you to win this game because we're in a crisis. So no pressure. I honestly don't know. There's no past precedence for this particular situation if it happens. But I don't know if there's anything else you want to add here. No. Okay. Leon Savranakis says, if things don't turn around in the next week, should we go ahead and sell Luka Modric in January to start the full rebuild?
Can we answer
this quickly?
No. Don't sell Luka. Keep Luka forever. Just don't let Luka Modric go anywhere.
Modric in the past has also mentioned that he would be happy to take a back seat and be a mentor to someone like Kovacic. You know, if that alone is to me just worth it for his brain and his mentorship and his like just his maturity. But I mean, he's still at a very good level.
Yeah, and that's you know he's not there yet. I still want to see him. I mean, okay, like we said, he looks tired, but when he's 100%, I still want to see him playing week in, week out.
Yeah, we have two more questions, and then you'll be out of your misery.
Cool. Go for it.
Armin Gashi says, another game, another L. What the F is going on? What do you guys really think of Lopetegui and his playing style? I'm already fed up with this whole idea. I think he's lost it and really don't think he's going to handle the pressure and neither the big personalities in the dressing room. The playing style is looking like an out-of-date style of possession play and it makes the players look like shit automatically. It's horrible to look at. A lot of crossbars. Levante is a must-win game, Armin goes on to say. So this is mostly about the style of play.
I don't know do you think that the idea of dominating possession is out of date? Like, I don't think it is. I think you can look at a whole bunch of big teams around Europe who look to dominate possession. Now, I understand there's a difference. What you don't want to see is that kind of sterile domination where you have a lot of the ball and you don't do anything with it.
Right.
But that's not the idea of this Real Madrid style. That's not what Lopetegui wants to do. You know, this Real Madrid team, they want to dominate possession, but they want to be incisive and rapid with those quick transitions. That now it doesn't mean that they're always achieving it. Of course, in recent weeks it's been difficult. But I don't think that playing with the idea of looking to dominate possession is out of date at all. Of course, there are some teams who have adopted you know, a we don't want the ball kind of style, but not the big teams. I mean, you look at the other big teams around Europe, and most of them still want to keep it. But I mean, look at the Premier League, look at City, look at Chelsea. These are teams that want to dominate possession.
My honest feeling about this is that when it works, we like it. When it doesn't work, we don't like it. If there were complaints, I didn't see them, but I didn't think there were any complaints at the beginning of the season when it was working. I think there are a lot of things that Lopetegui could be doing differently for the better. I don't hate the idea. Actually, in fact, I like the idea of keeping possession, because to me, Real Madrid had a couple of weaknesses in the past few years, even despite the success. One was the defending counterattacks, which, like, you would basically ask Varane to be skinned alive and save everything, which to me is like a testament to how great he is.
Yeah,
to
with his pace, he mostly deals with it.
Or ask Casemiro to do the things he does and kind of just to mask the holes. One way to obviously always like mask your defending is to just keep the ball so that you don't have to be put in that situation. The idea behind it makes sense to me. I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, like one of like a the trait of like, you know, like a tiki-taka, quote-unquote, I hate that word. I think even Guardiola hates it. But
Especially the way that it's ended up being what it has ended up meaning, as I say, is that kind of sterile domination by possession, which is never, that's never what Guardiola wanted either. That wasn't what Spain were about in their heyday.
No, but I mean, I think the idea behind what also accompanies possession football is the counter-press. And to win the ball high up the pitch, and also the idea, you know, there's like latent little details, like it earns you rest when you slow down the game. And you know, there's very strategic things. It's not always like doing nothing. But I think what the problem is that Real Madrid just haven't been incisive enough with their possession. They were very good against Roma in this regard. But there have been games where it just hasn't been good. So I think if they can figure out a way to get the off-ball movement a bit better, the movement from players like Ceballos and Asensio and Bale and Benzema, if the movement can be a bit better, the offense can be a bit more incisive, the complaints about possession will just go away.
Well, that's the other thing as well. If you look at some of the players that Real Madrid have, and you've just mentioned a number of them, they're players that suit that style. Like someone like Dani Ceballos, he's a player that needs to be playing in that kind of style. You see whenever he's on the pitch how he wants the ball, he wants to touch the ball all the time. You know, the same goes for a player like Kroos, the same goes for a player like Modric. And these are players, I think, that you couldn't necessarily ask to play a... I mean, I don't even know what a Real Madrid side that didn't want possession would look like. Do you know what I mean? I just think it's not a way that big clubs play, with the exception of maybe the Mourinho, United kind of model. But there's no one else, really.
I think the best I've seen it in the past, like, half a decade would be Ancelotti against Bayern, the 4-0 in Munich.
That was the most ruthless display of counter-attacking football that we've ever seen.
But the counter to that also is that you can't do that against every team.
Well, exactly.
No one will let you do that.
No, you can't do it against most teams, in fact, especially when you're...
Ironically, it's the big teams that will allow you to do it, because they'll go at you a bit. But it's just, you know, you can't do that against Levante, Alaves, etc. Last question, as it's starting to get dark here in Plaza de España. Tyler Dixon says... Ramos is getting older. Varane is in our future. Nacho isn't a starter, and Vallejo has injury problems that could stop him from being a starter. In my opinion, we need to go for Matthias De Ligt. He's young, outstanding talent with a heart to be a club captain at 18. Not a question, more of a statement.
I mean, what everybody wants De Ligt, don't they? I mean, he's been linked with, certainly with Barca, on the front pages of the Catalan press pretty much every day for the last about 6 months. The big English clubs as well, I think Bayern have been linked to him. So yeah, I think every big club in Europe is looking at De Ligt. I mean, I still think that with Ramos, Varane, Nacho, Vallejo, I feel a bit for Vallejo with the injury issues that he's had. And what we want to see is him staying injury free and being able to get some game time, because he hasn't had that, and therefore he hasn't been able to develop. I mean, I still think that Vallejo is a massive talent and a great option as the fourth choice centre back to learn from the others, but to do that, he needs to stay fit.
In theory, he's perfect for this. I mean, like, he's not going to demand much playing time. He's talented. I just, like you, I feel for his injuries. Like, it can't be easy.
And especially the kind of character he is, like, from what I've seen of him, like, he's quite a... Although he's also a leader, you know, he's been a captain. He was a captain of, what, Zaragoza when he was 17, 18. But he's quite a quiet, serious kind of young man.
Yeah.
You know, he's not your typical footballer. He's quite different to a lot of the other players.
Good head on his shoulders.
And that means that maybe he takes you can imagine him maybe taking a lot of these injury problems to heart a bit and finding it difficult. So I really hope that he manages to come out of it, because like I say, I think there is a real player in there.
Yeah, as do I. I also just like, there's that famous clip from last season. Remember when Ronaldo wasn't scoring goals, he was frustrated, and Vallejo, this like 20-year-old kid, is taking him aside in the tunnel. He's like, look, don't worry, the goals will come. Like, I think, I was just like, because I'm always saying this because I saw someone in Marca write saying that he's too shy for Real Madrid. And I just don't want people to mistake shyness for like lack of confidence or like maturity, you know. I think he has a really good
head on. I think when they say shyness, what they mean is, like I say, he isn't necessarily a typical footballer. Like, he seems to me, I remember watching his presentation,
Ramos.
It's just like a nice, quite a really nice young man.
Yeah.
You know, quite sort of softly spoken and stuff. But that, you're right, that shouldn't be misinterpreted as weakness, because in fact he's always been a leader.
Yeah. Alex Kirkland, I've kept you for 50 minutes, actually more, because before this we were also speaking in the park. So I think I've abused your time quite enough. But at some point, you know, whether it's like once or twice a year, we'll do this, right?
It's my pleasure. Yeah. We tend to get together in a park somewhere in Madrid at dusk, around about once a year to talk about talk about Real Madrid.
And it's
so
never sketchy.
Let's keep that tradition going.
I feel like this park is less sketchy than the previous park.
Yeah, Parque Berlin can be a little bit sketchy. Though. Yeah. Padre España is not sketchy.
It's lively, at least. Yeah. If something goes down, there's probably a policeman nearby. Alex Kirkland of Real Madrid TV, also a producer of the great TSF podcast. Please check it out if you haven't already. Thank you very much for everything that you do, covering us with Castilla and producing those great podcasts. Appreciate all your work, and thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Woof.